Underwriting support for Between the Stacks comes from Lakeville Books and Stationery, 329 Main Street in Lakeville, Connecticut, offering a wide selection of illustrated books, fine writing needs, and more. On the web, lakevillebooks.com. Robin Hood Radio presents Between the Stacks, a weekly chat about our local libraries.
Good morning. I'm Meg Scher, the director of the David M. Hunt Library in Falls Village, and I'm here with Leslie Battis, the assistant director of the Norfolk Library. Hi, Leslie.
Hello, Meg.
And we are going to start off today's show by talking about banned books, which is one of my favorite things to talk about. So I'm especially excited for this conversation. And we want to start off by talking about a new law that passed in the Connecticut State Legislature over the summer. It was in June 2025. And it was a provision of Public Act 25168. And Section 322. And basically what it does is implement new statutory requirements for Connecticut public libraries. And these requirements are around policies to help protect libraries. So the policies are specifically about how collection development, requests for reconsideration of materials, policy, program policies, and display policies. So all public libraries in the state of Connecticut were required to create these new policies. They include very specific wording, but the gist of it is that they're to protect libraries and librarians and the freedom to read whatever you wish. So a lot of it is about how we decide what materials we have in the library, how we decide what programs or what displays to show, and that not everyone may like all of the things that we offer, and that's okay. And there are ways that people can voice their opinions. I know, Leslie, you had said something when we were planning for this that I really appreciated about how you noticed that one of the ways this bill shifted the ways we had previously thought about reconsiderations was that only people in the community that the library is in can bring forth those requests for reconsiderations. Am I remembering that right?
Yes, and I think that is so important that the scope has been narrowed so it is the town and the town's people, actually the people, that can make that decision. And that is very comforting because then you don't have large groups and online, trolling and shutting down libraries because they're sending in huge lists of books they don't approve of.
Right, exactly. And one of the things I appreciated about this move towards policies also is that some of the wording is about not being able to sue specific librarians for the libraries producing programs or displays or having books that you don't agree with. So I think that's really important, and it's a move away from banning books, and I feel really grateful that our state is taking these measures in other states. In the news last week, if you didn't hear about it, there's a school district in New Braunfels, Texas, that has closed all of their elementary and secondary school libraries, locked the doors, kids can't access them, and the idea is that they're going to go through every single book and reconsider whether or not it's available. So in a time where this is happening in other parts of the country, I feel really grateful that our state is putting into law ways to protect libraries and librarians.
Yes, yes. Very important that to me, that the state was willing to shift the focus and protect the libraries and librarians. And so appreciative of that.
Yes, absolutely. So moving on from the policies, which I definitely wanted to talk about because I think it's important for people to know about, I know that both my library and your library, Leslie, do different things for Banned Book Week. So I'd love to hear. So Banned Book Week happens the second week in October. In my library, I know I like to keep the banned books up all month long. Mm-hmm. And I'd love to hear what you guys did for Banned Book Week this month.
This year, we decided to frame the week in a more positive manner than in years past. So rather than a banned books display about how horrible it is, we leaned into the theme of freedom to read and the First Amendment right to read, which we found some people didn't know that the freedom to read is guaranteed in the First Amendment. So right. That was a bit of education. And then we also wanted people to feel empowered rather than depressed and hopeless about the situation. Mm. And we did this one little thing, which is we made pins. We have a button maker, a pin maker. And they said things like freedom to read them and, you know, unite against banned books and, you know, just little slogans like that.
I love that.
And it what people loved it. And it seems like such a small thing, but the pins gave people something that they could do.
Mm-hmm.
They could wear the pin and spread the word or start a conversation in the produce section or whatever. And they were really popular. And I felt like it gave a better spin. Educational also, but gave a better spin on the banned books week for us.
So, right, and I love that. I love that you found a way to share new information about a topic that we talk about every year. That's awesome.
Yeah. How about you? Did you do anything different this year?
No, we have our usual banned book display. We made it a little bigger this year, and it's been really fun to have conversations. It's right in front of the checkout, the circulation desks, and so we've been having a lot of conversations with people about why different books are banned. Mm-hmm. Strega Nona has been one that's been having people raise their eyebrows a lot. And I'm not 100% sure, but my assumption is that that one has been banned because, you know, Strega Nona is kind of a witch, and there's some, like, occult magic-y stuff happening there with the pasta. And so starting lots of good conversations, which I think is the purpose of, you know, the purpose of the week, and that makes me really happy. Something that we do at the Hunt Library in partnership with the Falls Village Equity Project, I think this is our second year or third year, we've been running a banned book club. So it started during Banned Books Week, and now we're on an every other month schedule. So our banned book club will meet on the Friday, the 7th of November at 4 p.m., and we're discussing Looking for Alaska by John Green, which I just started last night and I'm enjoying already very much, diving into the world of a teenage boy newly landed at prep school. And Leslie, I know that you guys also read this at the Norfolk Library.
We did, and I enjoyed the book, and also the people in our group. It had great discussions. There's some great themes in there. It's really well written, and it also has some humor that you might not expect in there.
Right.
And it created conversations outside of the group. You know, we would see someone at the post office, and they would say, "Oh, I just can't get, you know, this out of my mind about that book." So I hope your group also enjoys it.
I'm really looking forward to having a discussion about it. And the last thing I wanted to say about banned books is to let everyone know that the Movie House is showing the documentary film The Librarians on Saturday, November 15th at 7 p.m. The film focuses on the fight for freedom to read, a lot of what we've been talking about today, book banning, school libraries, librarians being persecuted for trying to give people access to books. So I'm really excited to view that film, which I haven't seen yet. And there's going to be a panel of local librarians chatting for 20 to 30 minutes after the film. The panel's led by Gretchen, the director at the Sharon Hotchkiss Library, and I get to be on the panel. So I'm really looking forward to that.
I am also. That will be very, very interesting.
Yeah. So shifting a little bit, what are some of the most requested books at the Norfolk Library, Leslie?
Well, The Black Wolf by Louise Penny.
Uh-huh, here too.
Yeah, that's a huge list of people waiting for it. So that is our most requested at the moment. The Impossible Fortune by Richard Osman is still very popular.
Mm-hmm.
And in nonfiction, All the Way to the River by Elizabeth Gilbert is very popular. And she's a Norfolk resident now, so that might be driving a little bit of that popularity there.
So delighted to hear that. I learned that recently, and I was so excited.
So in addition to The Black Wolf, what else is popular for you?
Well, so some of ours are kind of old. You know, The Anxious Generation, mm-hmm. I can't keep it on the shelf.
I know, that's true.
Right. Also, Frozen River by Ariel Lahan. If you haven't read that yet,
I loved it. It was such a wonderful book.
And I ended up buying two copies for a book club because we couldn't get enough via interlibrary loan. And those two copies don't stay on the shelves.
Yeah. And that book is 2 years old?
Yeah. I think it's maybe it's even 2023. Yeah, I think you're right.
It might be. Yeah. It's amazing. The staying power of that book, but it is so good.
Yes, it's wonderful. And a more recent book that's been very popular here is William Kent Kruger's Apostles Cove. We always have a line for William Kent Kruger.
Of course.
And what have you been reading, Leslie?
Well, I read Nettle and Bone by T. Kingfisher, but I have to admit the only reason I read this book was because our first Monday book group chose the book.
I was going to say, that's out of normal genre for you, from what I know of you.
The book is a fantasy, and it involves many elements of a fairy tale. But when I read the first page, I remembered thinking, this book is not for me. A princess is sitting in a famine bone pit, building a dog out of bones that the bone dog will come to life, and the godmother will give the princess some information that she needs. And I was just like, nope, I don't think I can do this.
Did you make it to the end?
I did. I was going to say, with speculative fiction, you do get that sometimes where you're like, I don't know if my willing suspension of disbelief is up to this. But after 10 pages, I was just enthralled by the writing. The world building was great, and the characters were strong and endearing. And my favorite character actually turned out to be the bone dog.
Oh, how interesting.
So it's a good intro into the genre, which was good. So, and how about you?
So I was finally able to get my hands on My Friends by Frederick Bachman, which I've been waiting to read all summer. And I loved it so much. It might be my favorite book of the year.
Wow, I haven't read it yet. I have to now. Wow.
It's about a group of friends, teenage friends, who all kind of come from broken homes and have a hard time, and they find solace in each other, and they really form these wonderful bonds. And then there's some, you know, they get to be grown-ups, and there's some flashing back and connections. But the way that he is able to portray relationships and the way that we support one another and the things that people go through is just so beautiful and so engaging. And I didn't, you know, I both like wanted to know what happens next, but didn't want it to be over.
Right.
You know? I've been handing it to people every time it comes back into the library because it's a book written in translation. I can't remember if he's Swedish or Norwegian or what. And it also amazes me to think like his use of language is so incredible. And how does translation add to that? Right. Mm-hmm. I wish I could read it in its original form and kind of study the differences between the English and the language that it's written in originally, because to be able to translate it is such an incredible way. Feels like an extra feat on top of writing an incredible book.
Yes. Like a form of art, actually, to be able to do that.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. And I just read a great nonfiction book, actually, by Gwen Strauss, who has connections to this area, and she had done a book talk at Oblong, at the White Hart in the Oblong speaker series that I got to go to. And it was called Milena and Margarette, A Love Story in Ravensbrück. So it's about these two women who end up in the Ravensbrück concentration camp, and they fall in love. And it was spectacular.
Oh, my goodness. What a dangerous situation for them.
Yes. And, you know, it was, and it, again, kind of like the Bachman book, it was about the power of relationship.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And the way that something beautiful could blossom out of this horrible circumstance, and how the relationships between people imprisoned in this camp, you know, there were moments of beauty and kindness, even within the darkest of times. And I really loved that message and the story.
Yeah. I was going to say it's a good message for all of us.
Yes, it certainly is. It absolutely is. What exciting things do you have coming up at the library?
Well, Let's see. We have a documentary film series and a classic film series every year. Mm-hmm. And this year, for our classic film series, we're doing film noir.
Ooh.
Yes. And our first film in that series is Gilda on November 7th at 7 p.m. And we are fortunate to have film historian Robert Dance introducing the film. It's a black and white, and it looks very interesting. And then our documentary film is Coming to the Light, and it tells the story of Edward S. Curtis. He was a visionary artist who set out in the 1900s to document traditional Native life before it was gone. And he created thousands of recordings and photographs. And in the documentary, the Native American descendants of Curtis' photographic subjects tell the stories about the people in the pictures.
Oh, interesting.
I thought it was just so interesting.
Yeah.
And then they also describe the ways in which they're using the photographs to revive their own traditions in the modern world. And we are also, once again, fortunate to have director Anne Makepeace introduce the film.
Cool.
And in a very unique bit of serendipity, I found a copy of Edward Curtis's book, Portraits from North American Indian Life, in our upstairs collection of older books.
Oh, cool.
Many of these books were not added to our modern electronic catalog, and that's one of my projects is mm-hmm. I hang out in the upstairs and I go through them. And so we didn't even know we had this book until a few months ago. And the book is massive. It has to be the largest book in our collection.
Wow.
And it features his photographs. And we'll have that book available for viewing under supervision, of course, but that will be there. And this month, our art on the wall is Dana Rao. The works in the show include collage, paint, alcohol inks, and textile art, of which are these wonderful felted vessels.
Oh, cool.
And sales of the artwork support the library associates and the many free programs that they sponsor at the library. And as always, these events are on our website.
Great.
And how about you, Meg? What fun things do you have coming up?
So on the first Thursday of the month, we're trying something new in the fall where we're combining two of our smaller programs. So on the first Thursday of the month at 5:30 p.m., we have an LGBTQIA+ game night in the lovely upstairs portion of the library, and we run that program in partnership with Out in the Corner. And downstairs at 6 p.m., we have Stitching in the Stacks. So we have fiber enthusiasts downstairs and game players upstairs, and that's really lovely. Our art wall exhibit right now is Falls Village's Vincent Incognilios, and he has this incredible exhibit called FaceTime, and it spans almost his entire lifetime of work and is focused on masks and found objects, and that's really wonderful. So on Thursday, November 13th at 5:30, Vincent will be giving a talk about his work. And on Saturday, November 15th, we have something at 2. We have something that I'm really excited about because I'm a big cheese enthusiast. And Babs Perkins, who also lives in Norfolk and who had an art wall exhibit recently, will be doing, I learned from listening to her chat as she was taking down at her exhibit, that she does some documentary photography specifically with artisanal food, traditional food makers in the Balkan region.
Yeah.
So she's going to do a talk called In Search of the Wheat, Tracking Down a Balkan Cheese on the Verge of Extinction and Why It Matters to Us in Northwest Connecticut.
Oh, I love it.
Yeah, I'm really excited. And she was just there, so she's going to bring the cheese to taste.
I was just going to say, are you going to have cheese?
Yes, yay. I'm so excited. I'm so excited about it. And finally, switching gears a little bit, on November 20th, that's a Thursday, also at 7 p.m., Project Sage will be here to talk about digital safety for youth and what parents should know and be talking about, which is an important topic, and I'm looking forward to learning things as a mother of a almost 11-year-old.
Yeah, you're at that sort of witching hour age there for that.
Yeah, for sure.
That sounds like a great program.
Yeah, lots going on. Lots going on in both libraries.
Yeah.
Wonderful. Well, as always, Leslie, it is so fun to chat with you. Have a great rest of your day.
Yes, thank you, Meg. See you.
Between the Stacks is produced at the facilities of Robinhood Radio 91.9 FM, Sharon, Connecticut. Underwriting support for Between the Stacks comes from Lakeville Books and Stationery, 329 Main Street in Lakeville, Connecticut, offering a wide selection of illustrated books, fine writing needs, and more. On the web, lakevillebooks.com.